Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. You know how I say all the time the stock market is not the economy? Yeah, that. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Tuesday, today the 28th day of January. Good as always to have you along, everybody. Not for the first time on this program, we take our lead from our early rising colleagues on the Marketplace Morning Report. The news there, the news context here, and this morning early, with the markets bouncing back after the agita of yesterday, it went like this.
Well, the problem is that the market's been doing an awful lot better than the fundamentals.
That's David Kelly, a Morning Report regular, also the chief global strategist at JP Morgan Funds, talking to David Brancaccio this morning. Say more, though, would you, Mr. Kelly, about those fundamentals?
We're going to get a GDP number tomorrow, a little over 2%.
And why is that just 2%?
You know, between the federal government and the Federal Reserve, we've got all the stimulus being poured into the economy, and it's not actually helping the economy grow that fast.
Huh. So we got Tara Sinclair on the phone. She's a professor of economics at George Washington University, to break things down a little bit for us.
One of the big things that we were watching was the role of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act.
Also, the Fed, of course, keeping interest rates low.
That means that we're looking at savers trying to find a place to put their money to earn some income. And that pushes more money towards the stock market.
Which gets us to...
It does look like the stock market and the real economy are potentially out of line.
Aha! But... there is more to the fundamentals than just GDP.
At the same time, if we look at other figures, such as what's been going on in the labor market.
There is that 50-year low in unemployment, of course.
Things are still remarkably good, particularly when we think about how long this expansion has lasted.
Going on 11 years now, which helps explain why people are getting jittery when unforeseen stuff happens.
The coronavirus really being the driver of that tumble, and that people are worried that that might affect the Chinese economy.
That was yesterday, the coronavirus in the markets. Today, traders apparently decided the coronavirus isn't that big a deal. But look, fundamentally, this whole thing is all about confidence, right? How much consumers, which as we've been telling you for years now, are the single biggest driver of this economy, how much they think things are going to be okay. So to that end, a little compare and contrast now. We learned today from the Commerce Department that orders for durable goods, big expensive things, supposed to last a couple of years, we learned those orders were up in December. So far, so good. But there is a certain line item in that report that we pay attention to. Capital goods, equipment that businesses buy to produce more stuff. Orders for those dropped, which is not a good look for business investment. Consumer confidence, though, how we all feel about the economy, we learned that today improved more than expected. So, the essay question goes like this. Why do businesses seem to be skeptical about the economy while consumers think things are maybe not so bad? Marketplace's Kimberly Adams got the assignment.
Consumers are feeling better about the economy because after a long recovery since the recession, Josh Bivens at the Economic Policy Institute says most people...
they have really beaten down expectations. And so if you look over the past year, unemployment's pretty low. Wages are doing not great, but okay. Maybe they're like, this is as good as it's been for a while.
But business investment has been slowing for months now. And economists like to pay close attention to those numbers because weak business investment eventually ripples through the rest of the economy.
And so if you're trying to predict whether or not, say, a recession is coming, durable goods will sometimes sort of go down more quickly than other parts and be a better forecasting instrument.
because business investments in durable goods are a reflection of companies' own forecasts. Allison Schrager is a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. She says businesses are looking at the economy 5, 10, 20 years from now.
As opposed to consumers are really experiencing a very strong economy, and their outlook, as I said, is appreciably shorter. Also, when businesses invest, they're also often now more and more thinking about global markets, not just domestic markets.
And with the trade war far from over and risks from climate change, the outlook for the global economy is a bit uncertain just now. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
Wall Street on this Tuesday, maybe, as I said, traders were just thinking, you know, maybe the coronavirus, not all that bad. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Boeing reports earnings tomorrow before the open, and I'm just spitballing here, but it is not going to be pretty. Shutting down a key product line after two fatal accidents and a 10-month grounding don't really leave room for things to play out differently, right? But the 737 MAX disaster is an economic problem for more than just Boeing. It is such a big product, that plane, with such a big supply chain, that we are actually going to see a hit in overall economic growth. So, thought experiment. Is there anything else, any other single product that crucial to this economy that if it went away, it would show up in the data? Marketplace's Jack Stewart's been looking into that.
Boeing is America's biggest exporter, so not being able to deliver what was its fastest selling model, the 737 MAX, well, that was always going to take a chunk out of the economy. Moody's Analytics chief economist Mark Zandi ran the numbers.
It was bigger than I expected, but before I did the calculation, we now expect the impact on first quarter GDP growth to be somewhere between 3 and 4 tenths of a percent, which is consequential.
So let's say the economy was going to grow at about 2%, it would now be 1.6 or 1.7% growth because of the MAX. Now, there aren't many other products with a list price of $100 million. So let's consider one with a starting price of about $30,000, but one which sells in much higher volumes.
The high-strength, military-grade aluminum alloy Ford F-150 with best-in-class payload.
Ford sells an F-Series pickup truck every 30 seconds. What would happen if the F-150 just went away? Mark Zandi again.
Yeah, I took a look at that because you asked. The Ford 150 would probably about be half the impact of the 737 MAX, you know, something like 1 to 2 tenths of a percent of GDP, so also consequential.
Zandi says if you want to see what else can shrink the economy, you have to look at services, not just goods. Shutting down all child daycare centers would have a similar impact to halting the MAX production line. It would basically mean a lot of people can't get to work. Then there's a slice of American agriculture that the USDA says is worth $50 billion a year.
The poultry industry, so you shut that down, you know, the chickens that we produce and turkeys, if that all shut down, that'd be approximately equal to the 737 MAX.
There are examples from the past, too. I asked economic historian Claudia Goldin at Harvard if there was anything she could think of that would rival the importance of the 737 MAX. She says Robert Fogel, Nobel Prize-winning economist, performed a thought experiment in the 1960s. He analyzed the importance of the trains, which were seen as critical to American economic expansion.
So if we ripped up all the railroads in 1890, gross national product,
which is similar to GDP,
would have been reduced by about 6%.
Big as that impact sounds, it probably wouldn't have been catastrophic. Fogel's work showed people would have just turned to alternatives. Just like if Ford stopped making trucks, customers could walk into the Chevy dealer. There are fewer alternatives for plane buyers. Airbus does already have a backlog. But the economic lessons seem to hold today. The grounding of the MAX has provided a natural experiment into that for economists like Michael Pierce from Capital Economics.
The fact that you can completely take offline one of the largest products in it and the economy still rolls on, is still creating plenty of jobs, is still growing at a healthy pace, suggests that the US economy is just a much larger, much more diverse economy than any one product.
Boeing's latest estimate is that the 737 MAX will be back in service mid-2020. It wants to restart production even before that. And when deliveries and payments resume, the hit to the economy will diminish. I'm Jack Stewart for Marketplace.
The tech news today comes from the UK, where the government of Prime Minister Boris Johnson has said it is going to let Huawei gear be used in some parts of its 5G wireless network. That is not what the Trump administration wanted to hear. Its position has been that having a Chinese company inside any telecommunications network is a security threat. But as Marketplace's Sabri Benishore reports, this is not a total victory for Huawei or China either.
Huawei isn't banned in Britain, but it's not scot-free either.
The new rules exclude Huawei and any other what they call high-risk vendor from the more sensitive parts of the communications network.
Doug Brake is with the Information Technology and Innovation Foundation. Huawei is pretty much limited to providing equipment that would go into cell phone towers, mostly in rural areas. And even then, there's a limit.
They can't have equipment that touches more than 35% of the volume of the 5G network, as well as the number of base stations.
There are lots of reasons Britain didn't kick Huawei out completely. The UK doesn't want to upset the US, but it doesn't want to upset China either. And anyway, the US was late in complaining, says Matthew Howitt with Assembly Research in the UK.
The horse had already bolted.
The British telecom giants had already started using Huawei years ago, and to rip it out of the system now would have been costly.
That would have taken, we think, between 18 and 24 months to do. Would have cost the UK economy nearly £7 billion.
Howitt also says the UK's been using and auditing Huawei technology for a decade now and thinks it can handle any risks. But the UK's decision will bring consequences. James Lewis is with the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
I think it will influence the trade deal with the US.
He says an already difficult negotiation over trade with the US post-Brexit just got harder. Other European countries like Germany may follow the UK's example, limiting but not expelling Huawei, and that could raise tensions between the US and Europe even more. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
In today's What Company Are We Talking About Here quiz, see if you can name the single manufacturer of all of these items. Industrial adhesives, airplane parts, and medical supplies. Remember, it's one company. Nothing? Okay. These next ones are the giveaway. Scotch tape and Post-it notes. Yes, 3M announced today it is cutting 1,500 jobs amid declining revenues and a lower outlook for the year. As Marketplace's Mario Segarra reports, the company's earnings report and that diversified product line is kind of a window into the bigger economy.
When you look at 3M's earnings, you see all these economic factors at play. Number one, the global manufacturing slowdown, which is happening in part because businesses are worried about the global economy. So they're holding off on buying parts and supplies.
They're not going to buy 10 widgets if they don't think that the global economy is going to remain in robust territory.
Lindsay Piegza, chief economist at Stiefel, says 3M and other manufacturers that sell industrial parts and supplies to businesses are feeling the pain.
Manufacturers need to make fewer goods to meet now that lower level of demand.
Okay, economic factor number two, Boeing. In December, it halted production on its 737 MAX planes after two crashes killed 346 people. That has a ripple effect on the companies that supply parts for airplanes, including 3M. John Ostrower edits the aviation newsletter, The Air Current.
There is an enormous network of companies that produce everything from the sign above the lavatory to the seatback screen to electronics in the cockpit seats.
And these companies don't know when Boeing will start making the plane again.
It makes it really hard to make investments, to plan your staffing, to essentially be ready to support this.
And finally, factor number three, the coronavirus outbreak. 3M CEO said today that demand for its protective face masks has gone up. We'll probably see evidence of that in the company's next earnings report. I'm Mariel Segarra for Marketplace.
Coming up.
The weather is like this. 40-mile-an-hour winds, ice flowing off the ice shelf. It is fresh out here.
A dispatch from the front lines of climate change straight ahead. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's up 187 today, 0.6%, 28,722. The NASDAQ advanced 130 points, 1.4%, 92.69. The S&P 500 picked up 32 points, about 1%, 32.76 there. We just heard about 3M and Mariel. Shares of Minnesota Mining and Manufacturing dropped 5.7% today after that disappointing earnings report. Beyond Meat was up about 4% yesterday on news of an expanded partnership with restaurant chain Denny's. Today, it's down just under 4% after the stock was downgraded by J.P. Morgan. This is what stocks do, yo. They go up. They go down. Cruise lines got hammered yesterday on coronavirus fears. Today, better. Norwegian Cruise Lines sail ahead 1.5%. Percent and a half is another way to say that. Royal Caribbean picked up 3%. Today, you're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. The Federal Reserve is meeting today and tomorrow on interest rates and the overall state of this economy. There's probably not going to be a change in rates, and Jay Powell at his press conference is probably going to say the economy is doing all right, depending, as he always cautions, on what the data says. The Fed's got its data sources. We got ours, by which I mean people who we get on the phone and talk to. Austin Golding's one of them. He's the president of Golding Barge Line down in Vicksburg, Mississippi. Austin, good to talk to you again.
Hey, Kai, good to talk to you.
First things first, as always, how's business in Vicksburg?
Business is good. Business in Vicksburg locally here is improving. The economy in Mississippi is probably a little behind the economy in Vicksburg. We really have a lot going on here.
How's the barge business?
The barge business is better than it was last year, but it's kind of plateaued a little bit. We've seen kind of a flux in export of a lot of our products, and I've seen volumes kind of level out, but business is better than it was last year.
You haven't been feeling the trade war, right? I mean, you carry mostly petroleum, right? So have you been feeling the trade war or no?
Well, we feel the trade war certainly around, I guess, use of diesel fuel. And as there's more exports, then we're going to have a pull on that. Huh. And there's also more traffic on the river at certain points if exports are really rolling. But probably with the net export of a lot of our crude oil we're producing in this country, we've actually seen probably a net increase.
What's the makes sense. What's the biggest headwind for you then?
I would say probably looking at getting our handle on our infrastructure and getting a handle on how we control what climate change is doing to our industry. We're having a every year high water situation right now. I know last year we talked about the high water, but I'm looking out the window in Vicksburg and the river today is about 5 feet higher than it was this day last year. Wow. Well, I mean, last year we just got done living in a once a century environment last year, and it's already 5 feet higher this year. So we're interested in the stability, consistency, and healthiness of our waterways. No question about it. And a lot of time and effort goes into preserving those. Unlike a highway or a rail or an airport, we operate within a living being of an ecosystem, and our ecosystem is what puts food on the table.
Climate aside, what are the fundamentals of Golding Barge Lines? I mean, are you guys hiring? Are you able to raise wages? What are you able to do?
So we're definitely hiring, and we are seeing wage increases go up for our existing employees also. I would venture to say that wages are, by a slim margin, our most inflated cost sector. That's not always been the case, but it is right now in an attempt to retain a lot of our top talent.
Is there a barge personnel bidding war going on?
Well, and it's actually probably what I would call a skilled worker bidding war going on right now. As our workers get credentialed as tankermen, and have a license applied to their skills that's verifiable, then other employers know this person is capable and reliable, and will show up and has a set of skills somebody's willing to slap a license on. But please don't let that be an advertisement to come get our employees.
Well, I was just going to say, if you're smart, you're doing the same thing to other companies, right?
We are, and I think the fact that you double your salary when you go from a deckhand to a tankerman, wow. And then you double your salary when you go from a tankerman to the wheelhouse, our guys and gals driving these boats are making $130,000 to $180,000 a year, so that's not the one I'm worried about losing. I'm really worried about that salary that's around $65,000 to $75,000. I think we'll see an increase in those salaries in the coming year, an attempt to hold that type of worker within our ranks. But you know what, Kai? I love paying those wages. Doubling somebody's salary from an entry level to mid level position, and then again from a mid level to a top level position, is why my family's still in business. That's the story we hang our hat on. And if those wages are increasing, as long as they're sustainable, I'm happy to give those raises.
The family business is Golding Barge Line down in Vicksburg, Mississippi. Austin Golding runs the place. Austin, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Kai.
Let's stipulate a couple of things in setting up this next story, okay? Number one, climate change is real. Number two, humans are the cause. Numbers three and four, there will be some economic gains, but far more expensive economic costs. With that in mind, a trip now to the source of some of the sea level rise that is threatening low-lying cities everywhere on this planet. The Thwaites Glacier in Antarctica is huge. It's the size of Britain, give or take, and its melt accounts for about 4% of global sea level increases every year. And now the biggest scientific field project in history has confirmed that the glacier is melting increasingly quickly. The BBC's chief environment correspondent, Justin Rowlett, sent this report.
Kilo Bravo X-ray, skiway 25, cleared for takeoff.
It takes hours to fly across the West Antarctic. There is more than 3 meters of sea level rise locked up in the ice sheet here. The weakest point is Thwaites Glacier. Thwaites is massive and is collapsing into the sea in a chaos of ice at up to 2 miles a year. Keith Nichols of the British Antarctic Survey is one of the lead scientists on the project.
The biggest uncertainty is associated with the Antarctic ice sheet. That's the one we know least about, and the one that has in some ways been excluded from estimates for the future simply because we know so little about it, because it is so uncertain. All we know is it is going to contribute to sea level rise. What we don't know is how much and how quickly it'll contribute to sea level rise.
That is because it is so hard to do science here. This is the stormiest region of the stormiest continent on Earth.
Sometimes the weather is like this. 40-mile-an-hour winds, ice flowing off the ice shelf, even though it's actually quite warm, -1, -2. I'll tell you, it is fresh out here.
Hello!
It took 5 weeks just to get the science teams and their equipment to the front of the glacier. Only 4 people have ever been here before, and they were the advance party for this year's project. There is a lot of digging. The scientists need to melt 10 tons of snow. They use a bank of boilers to heat the water to just below boiling point, then spray it onto the ice to melt a hole.
This is a historic moment, the first time anyone has tried to drill down through this glacier. Beneath the 600 metres of ice below me is the most important point of all, the point at which the ice meets the ocean water.
The team deploy a whole suite of scientific instruments into the water below the glacier to collect information on temperature, salinity and turbulence. They even launch a bright yellow robot submarine called Icefin.
The most important sensors on the vehicle are actually measuring the characteristics of the water.
Brittany Schmidt is from Georgia Tech University.
It tells you where the water formed and where it's coming from and how much potential it has for melting.
The entire West Antarctic region is uniquely vulnerable to melting. The bed slopes downwards below sea level. That means as the warm water melts the glacier, it just exposes more and more ice. David Holland is an oceanographer at the University of New York.
If we look here from east to west, the ice front is 10 times bigger than Greenland. The ice volume is 10 times bigger. Everything here is way bigger. It's just a different scale.
Let's fire next interval.
Copy that. Next interval. Successful shot from here.
Seismologists use explosives to map the ground under the glacier. The scientists think the wind and ocean currents on the coast of West Antarctica are being altered by our changing climate.
Fire next interval in 1 minute 35.
The ice isn't going to vanish overnight. It will take decades, possibly centuries. But this research has already shown it is melting, and that will mean huge changes for us all in the years to come.
The BBC's chief environment correspondent, Justin Rollat, in Antarctica for us. This final note on the way out today brought to us by the letters C, B, and O and the sum of $1 trillion. CBO, of course. Well, of course, in my world, I guess, stands for Congressional Budget Office, which released its latest budget and economic outlook today. Here are the news takeaways. The deficit this year, remember, that's just how much more we are spending this year than we are taking in, will top $1 trillion. It'll average $1.3 trillion again every single year from 2021 to 2030, and economic growth will average 1.7% over that same period. So here's just a little bit of news context. By 2030, the end of the CBO's outlook, the entire federal debt, that is all the money we owe, will be 98% the size of the entire economy. That is the highest percentage since the end of the Second World War. All right, we got to go. Dow Industrials up 187 points today, 0.6%. The NASDAQ advanced 130 points. That is 1.4%. The S&P 500 picked up 32 points. That is 1% there. Our digital and on-demand team includes Janet Wynn, Olga Oxman, Brian Ronahan, and Tony Wagner. Star Nieves is our executive director of on-demand. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.